Ever get that feeling, you know, on a project? When, like, things are clearly going sideways, but everyone's kind of tiptoeing around actually saying the word problem? Well, today we're diving into Gerhard Friedrich's work, specifically his piece on handling IT project failures. And he's got some pretty straight-talking advice on how to navigate those tricky moments, so.
Friedrich really doesn't sugarcoat anything, does he? He jumps right in and compares avoiding the word problem to something straight out of 1984.
Hold on, 1984, that seems a little, I don't know, intense for project management, right?
Well, think about it. They use newspeak to control thought by eliminating words for anything negative.
Okay.
And Friedrich argues that when we dance around saying problem, we're kind of doing the same thing to our projects.
So instead of clear communication, we get stuck in this world of like euphemisms and ambiguity.
Exactly. Yeah. Real issues get buried under all that. And that, I mean, think about it. That can lead to some pretty serious consequences down the line.
Yeah, no.
You know, imagine like you're in a project meeting, everyone's talking, but no one's actually addressing the elephant in the room.
Train.
So frustrating, so unproductive.
Ugh, I've been there for sure.
It's the worst.
Okay, so point taken. Acknowledging problems is key.
Right.
But, you know, what about those situations where things aren't so black and white? Like, what if there are multiple valid viewpoints on how to approach an issue?
Oh, Friedrich tackles that too.
Okay.
He actually challenges this whole idea that there's no right or wrong,
Yeah.
especially when it comes to making crucial decisions for a project.
Well, wait, isn't it good to be open to different perspectives?
Of course,
That's
but
good.
Friedrich's arguing that blindly accepting every viewpoint without any criteria for making a decision, that can be just as dangerous as ignoring problems altogether.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah, he uses this analogy. It's pretty powerful. Imagine a surgeon about to operate, right?
Yeah.
And someone says, well, there's no right or wrong knee to operate on.
Right.
Sounds ridiculous.
That's terrifying, yeah. You need some clear criteria to make the right call.
Absolutely.
And that same principle applies to, you know, IT projects. Decisions need to be made based on clear goals, understanding the constraints, the risks, all of that.
Okay, so how do we make sure we're making those, I don't know, those tough calls in a way that's effective and, well, not completely random?
This is where Friedrich really highlights the importance of having some really robust prioritization methods in place.
Okay.
He's a big advocate for frameworks like the Theory of Constraints, TOC, and the Scaled Agile framework, better known as SAFe.
Okay. For those of us who aren't familiar with those, could you maybe break those down a bit?
Sure. So TOC, it's a powerful tool for identifying bottlenecks.
Okay.
Imagine a traffic jam, right? The bottleneck is that one lane that's causing everything to slow down.
Yep.
So TOC helps you find that constraint in your project and focus on fixing it. And then once you do that, the whole project flows much more smoothly.
So instead of trying to solve every single problem at once,
You kind of have this laser focus on the biggest roadblock.
you got it.
Okay, cool.
Now, SAFe is a bit different. It's more of a framework for managing those really large, complex projects.
Okay.
And it includes a prioritization method called WSJF, which stands for Weighted Shortest Job First.
Weighted shortest job first. Okay, that sounds kind of complicated.
No. It's actually simpler than it sounds. Basically, you evaluate each task, you know, based on its potential value and then the cost of delaying it. And the ones with the highest scores, those get prioritized. Think of it as like a triage system for your project, you know,
Okay.
making sure you're always working on those most impactful things first.
I like that triage system for projects.
Yeah.
So even if there's uncertainty, you've got this framework that helps you make those choices without just relying on your gut.
Exactly.
But I mean, let's face it, projects can get messy, people make mistakes. How does Friedrich address that whole blame game that can come up?
Well, he advocates for creating a no-blame culture to encourage open communication. He's also realistic. He reminds us that, you know, projects exist within a legal framework, and sometimes contracts require determining fault.
So it's this balance, right? You want to promote collaboration where people feel safe to learn from mistakes, but then you also have these legal implications to consider.
It's like walking a tightrope
Yeah.
between encouraging teamwork and acknowledging those real-world consequences.
Okay, so how do you actually navigate that? How do you address individual mistakes without, you know, creating a culture of fear?
Friedrich shares this anecdote, it's pretty interesting, about getting advice on how to deal with team errors.
Okay.
And get this, the advice came from a PMI chatbot.
A chatbot? Seriously?
No, I'm serious. In this chatbot, It really stressed approaching mistakes systematically.
Okay.
First, you analyze the situation objectively, like understand why the error happened before assigning blame.
Makes sense.
Then have an open conversation with the team. You know, talk about what went wrong, what can be learned, how to prevent it from happening again.
So it's not about sweeping mistakes under the rug. It's about turning those errors into, like, valuable learning experiences.
Exactly. And the chatbot also emphasized documenting these lessons learned, you know. Mm-hmm. Create this knowledge base so the whole team benefits.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So building this library of what not to do to avoid repeating those same mistakes.
Exactly.
This chatbot sounds like it's got a future in consulting.
Right.
Okay, so this whole conversation about learning from mistakes, it ties into a concept Friedrich calls a positive error culture.
Right.
And he's pretty critical of the way we just accept bugs in software development, saying that this acceptance can actually lower our quality standards.
It's true. I think most people just kind of accept that software will always have a few bugs.
Yeah.
But Friedrich challenges that, you know.
Yeah.
He shares a story from Tom DeMarco about these two developers who created a bug-free program.
Wow, really?
Yeah, and when asked how they did it, they said, "We didn't know bugs were allowed."
Wow, so their mindset of we're building perfect code actually led to a flawless product.
It seems so, and Friedrich argues that this whole bugs are inevitable mentality, it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know?
Yeah.
It limits our potential to create truly high-quality software.
So he's encouraging us to rethink our expectations and aim for a higher standard.
Absolutely.
But how do we move from a culture that accepts bugs to one that's, you know, actively trying to prevent them?
That's a great question. And it leads to one of Friedrich's most thought-provoking suggestions.
Yeah.
Replace the word blame with...
Let me guess. Responsibility.
You got it.
Okay.
He believes that this seemingly small language shift can have a huge impact on project dynamics.
Mm.
Instead of focusing on who messed up, we shift the focus to understanding the situation and finding solutions together.
Responsibility instead of blame. I can already see how that would change the whole team dynamic, but how do we put that into practice? And what about the role of leadership in fostering this kind of culture?
Those are great questions. And those are exactly what we're going to dive into in the next part of our deep dive.
All right. Stay tuned for part two, where we'll explore how this idea of responsibility plays out in the real world and how leaders can create an environment that truly embraces learning from mistakes. Welcome back to our deep dive into Gerhard Friedrich's take on IT project challenges.
All right, so before the break, we were talking about this pretty radical idea, you know, replacing blame with responsibility.
Yeah, it's a big shift.
Huge. Instead of dwelling on who messed up, you're focusing on understanding and finding solutions as a team.
I feel like that would really change the whole, like, energy of a project, you know?
Absolutely.
So how does this responsibility mindset actually play out, like, in a real situation?
Okay, so imagine a critical deadline gets missed.
Okay.
Instead of all the finger-pointing and accusations flying around the team, they get together, they analyze what happened.
Okay.
And each member, they take ownership of their part in the process, focusing on what they could done differently and what they learned from it.
So it's less about, you know, punishment and more about turning that experience into something constructive, a learning opportunity for everyone.
Exactly. And it doesn't diminish accountability at all.
Right.
Actually, it strengthens it. By owning their actions, individuals become more invested in finding solutions and preventing those same issues from popping up again.
It's about creating a culture where people feel safe to admit their mistakes, knowing they'll be met with support, not judgment, right?
That's the key.
But this all hinges on a team that's already kind of bought into this philosophy.
Yeah.
What about the role of leadership in actually fostering this kind of environment?
Oh, leadership is crucial. It all starts with setting the tone. Leaders who are willing to admit their own mistakes and take responsibility for team setbacks, they create a culture where others feel comfortable doing the same.
It's leading by example, showing that vulnerability isn't a weakness, it's actually a strength.
Exactly. And it goes beyond just words, you know. Leaders need to create space for open communication, where team members can voice concerns, share ideas, and, yeah, admit mistakes without fear of, you know, retribution.
It's that psychological safety we talked about before. It's got to be woven into all the team's interactions.
Absolutely. Leaders can also reinforce this culture by clearly outlining roles and responsibilities, you know, providing regular feedback and just offering support when needed.
Mm-hmm.
It's about creating a framework where everyone understands what's expected of them and feels empowered to contribute.
And of course, celebrating successes is important too, right? Reinforce those positive behaviors.
Yeah, for sure. That builds morale.
Okay, but let's be real. Not all projects are sunshine and rainbows, Friedrich talks about. Like the elephant in the room when it comes to software development, bugs.
Ugh, yeah.
And he really challenges the assumption that they're just an inevitable part of the process.
He argues that accepting bugs as normal can actually lower our standards for quality. We become complacent, almost expecting things to be flawed.
It's like we've normalized mediocrity.
Yeah, but Friedrich's suggesting we can do better. He points to that anecdote from Tom DeMarco about the developers who created a bug-free program.
Right, right.
And they did it simply because they didn't even know bugs were allowed.
So their mindset was basically, we build perfect code, and that belief shaped their whole approach.
Exactly, and Friedrich argues that we can learn from that. What if we shifted our thinking from bugs are inevitable to bugs are unacceptable?
It's a bold challenge, but I mean, think about the potential. It's not about denying that mistakes happen. It's about raising the bar and striving for excellence.
Absolutely. It's about creating a culture where quality is paramount
and
everyone's invested in achieving it.
Okay, but even with the best intentions, mistakes still happen. Friedrich talks about that dreaded postmortem, that moment of truth after a project goes sideways.
Right.
How can we approach those in a way that's actually constructive and not just a blame fest?
Well, it's a delicate balance. You need to understand what went wrong without creating that culture of fear we talked about.
Right.
Friedrich emphasizes that postmortems should be approached with curiosity.
Okay.
And a spirit of learning. The goal isn't to find scapegoats. It's to understand the root causes of the issues, document those lessons learned, and prevent them from happening again.
So it's less about who messed up and more about what can we learn from this.
Exactly. And it's essential to involve everyone who played a role in the project.
Okay.
Each team member brings a unique perspective, and you need that collective insight to really get a complete picture of what happened.
It's like piecing together a puzzle. You need all the pieces to see the full image.
Yeah, good analogy.
But even with a, you know, blameless postmortem, uncovering those root causes can still be challenging.
Right, and that's where Friedrich's emphasis on prioritization methods comes in.
Okay.
By using frameworks like TOC or SAFE, you can identify bottlenecks and prioritize the most impactful tasks, even when things are, you know, chaotic.
So even in the middle of a project fire, these tools can help you regain control and make those informed decisions.
Exactly. They provide a roadmap for navigating complexity and uncertainty.
Okay, so Friedrich also acknowledges that there's this, like, tension that exists within this no-blame philosophy, especially in the real world of contracts and legal frameworks, right?
Of course, projects don't exist in a vacuum.
Right.
There are real-world consequences, and sometimes contracts require assigning fault.
So how do you reconcile these seemingly conflicting ideas?
Friedrich advocates for creating a protected space within the team where the focus is on collaboration and learning,
okay,
while also being mindful of the legal realities that exist outside that space.
So it's about being realistic about the complexities of the situation.
Yeah.
Encourage open communication and learning within the team, but also understand that there might be legal considerations that require a different approach.
Exactly. It's a delicate balancing act.
Yeah.
And Friedrich even suggests involving legal counsel early on in the project.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like even during contract drafting. It can help align the legal framework with those agile principles.
So it's not just about changing the culture within the team. It's about advocating for changes in the systems and structures that actually glue in these projects.
Exactly. He highlights his work with the Agile Agreement Network, which focuses on creating contracts that are more aligned with, you know, Agile principles.
That's fascinating. It's like recognizing that Agile isn't just a set of practices. It's a philosophy that needs to be embedded in every aspect of the project.
Yes, even the legal framework.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about how individual team members can embrace responsibility.
Yeah.
But what about leadership? How does this responsibility over blame philosophy apply to those at the, you know, at the helm?
Oh, that's a great question. Leaders set the tone for the entire team, so their actions really speak volumes.
Right.
Leaders who truly embody this philosophy, they understand they're not infallible. They make mistakes too.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do, they own them. They demonstrate that vulnerability is a strength, not a weakness.
They're modeling the behavior they want to see in their team.
Exactly. And they also take responsibility for the team's overall performance.
Okay.
So if things aren't going well, they look inward and ask, you know, what could I have done differently to support my team? What resources or guidance could I have provided?
Right. Yeah.
It's about taking ownership even when it's uncomfortable.
So shifting the focus from blame to understanding and finding solutions together?
Precisely. And it's about empowering the team to find those solutions.
Okay.
Leaders who embrace responsibility, they create an environment where team members feel empowered to identify problems, brainstorm ideas, and take ownership of the outcomes.
It's about fostering that sense of collective responsibility, right? Where everyone feels invested in the project's success.
Exactly. And that leads to greater engagement, motivation, and ultimately better results. Now, before we move on, there's one final point I want to touch on from Friedrich's work. He talks about the importance of using language carefully.
Okay.
Especially when it comes to words like, you know, mistake and problem.
Interesting. I can see how language can really shape our perceptions and reactions.
Absolutely. He argues for a more nuanced and context-aware use of these terms.
Okay.
Not all mistakes are created equal, right?
Right.
Some are minor, while others have, you know, serious consequences.
So it's about being mindful of the situation and using language that's constructive rather than destructive.
Exactly. So instead of saying, you know, you made a huge mistake,
right,
which instantly puts someone on the defensive, you might say something like, I noticed an error here. Can you help me understand how it happened?
So creating a space for dialogue and problem solving,
yeah,
rather than blame and shame.
Exactly. It's about using language to foster that culture of learning and growth.
Okay, well, that brings us to the end of part two. We've covered a lot of ground, from the power of responsibility to the importance of mindful communication.
We've discussed practical strategies for navigating blame, making those tough decisions, and creating a more positive and productive work environment.
And hopefully you'll walk away from this deep dive feeling empowered to apply these insights to your own work and even your own life.
Absolutely. Remember, it's not about achieving perfection. It's about constantly striving to be better together.
Thanks for joining us. And until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and keep diving deep.
All right, welcome back to our deep dive into Gerhard Friedrich's wisdom on conquering, you know, those IT project challenges.
Mm-hmm.
We've explored some pretty big concepts, right? Like reframing problems, shifting from blame to responsibility, and, you know, really fostering a culture of learning from mistakes.
Yeah, a lot to unpack.
But, you know, I'm curious, how do we actually put all of this into practice?
That's the real question, isn't it?
Right.
It's one thing to talk about it. It's another to actually make it happen in the real world.
Especially when you're in the thick of it, you know?
Right.
Deadlines looming, pressure's on.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So any practical strategies that we can, like, start using today?
Where Friedrich really emphasizes clear and consistent communication. Okay, that sounds simple enough, but what does that actually look like, you know, day to day?
Well, it starts with being intentional about the language you use. We touched on this before, but it's worth repeating.
Yeah.
Instead of using accusatory language, like you made a mistake.
Right.
Try framing it as a learning opportunity.
Okay.
You could say something like, hey, I noticed an error here. Can we maybe explore what happened and how we can prevent it going forward?
Yeah, I like that. It's subtle, but that shift in language can make a huge difference.
Huge. It creates a much more collaborative environment.
Yeah.
Less defensive.
Right, right.
And it's not just about individual conversations either, you know?
Okay.
Think about how you communicate project updates, risks, challenges. Be transparent, be honest, even when it's uncomfortable.
So radical honesty.
Yeah, basically, it might feel counterintuitive, but being upfront about challenges can actually build trust, you know, and foster a sense of shared ownership.
Okay.
And when problems do arise, and they will, don't shy away from them. Embrace them as opportunities for growth.
That reminds me of, you know, Friedrich's take on postmortems.
Uh-huh.
He really challenges that traditional approach of just pointing fingers and blaming it.
Yeah. He's all about a more constructive, collaborative approach.
Right.
Remember, the goal isn't to punish anyone. It's to understand what happened, why it happened, and how to prevent it from happening again.
Turn those oops moments into learning experiences.
Exactly. And here's a tip. Involve everyone who is part of the project.
Okay.
Not just leadership. Get those diverse perspectives on what worked well, what could have been better, what lessons can be learned.
Makes sense. Everyone brings something unique to the table.
Absolutely. You need that collective insight.
Right. It's like piecing together a puzzle.
Yeah. You need all the pieces to see the whole picture.
Okay. But even with a, let's say, blameless postmortem, uncovering those root causes can still be tough.
True. And that's where those decision-making frameworks come in, like TOC and SAFE.
Right, right. Remind us again how those can help, especially when things get a little, you know, heated.
Okay, so TOC, it's all about identifying and addressing those bottlenecks, remember?
Mm.
It's like finding that one clogged pipe, that's causing the whole system to back up.
Okay, yeah.
You focus your efforts on that constraint, and the whole project flows better.
It's about finding the leverage point.
Exactly. And then SAFE, with its WSJF method, helps you prioritize based on value and cost of delay.
So it's like a triage system.
Exactly. You're always working on the most important things.
They help you make those tough calls, especially when there's pressure or uncertainty.
For sure. They help you stay focused on what matters.
Okay, but even with the best frameworks, you still need that culture of trust and collaboration, right?
Absolutely. That's where the responsibility over blame comes in.
Mm-hmm.
When people feel safe to admit mistakes, share their concerns, that's when you create an environment for learning and growth.
It's about recognizing that we're all human. We all mess up sometimes.
Yeah, the key is to learn from it and get better.
Okay, so maybe the most important takeaway from Friedrich's work is that mindset of continuous learning and improvement.
It's not about being perfect. It's about always striving to be better.
Yeah, and that applies to, I mean, everything, not just projects.
Exactly. Be curious, ask questions, look for opportunities to grow.
So view those challenges as stepping stones.
Beautifully said. I think that's the essence of what Friedrich is trying to convey.
Yeah.
Approach everything with purpose, you know, intentionality and that commitment to learning.
Well, on that note, I think we've reached the end of our deep dive into the wisdom of Gerhard Friedrich.
That went by fast.
We covered a lot, confronting problems, fostering a culture of learning.
Practical strategies for navigating blame, making tough decisions, creating a more positive work environment.
Hopefully you're leaving this deep dive feeling empowered, ready to apply these insights to your own work and your own life.
It's not about being perfect. It's about constantly striving to be better together.
Thanks for joining us. And until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and keep diving deep.